So this is the bit before the music where I used to give an apology and then I started saying something funny and now I've got to do an apology. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm having some work done at home. That means I've got to record in the spare room. The acoustics are a bit naff. So if the recording quality isn't up to its usual standard of mediocrity, I can only apologise. Also, I do have a few interviews in this episode, and because they were done on Zoom, the sound quality isn't necessarily the best. I mean, the sound quality is all right, you know, you can still hear what's going on. It's just sometimes sounds a little bit tinny, that's all. So, you know, let's make the most of it. It is Christmas after all. Yeah, play the music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says he, my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. It's great to see you. Oh, we're getting so close to Christmas. I can almost taste it. Actually, I can taste it. I've been drinking loads of mulled wine. I just love mulled wine. It's so nice. And it gets me drunk. So, you know, it's win-win. So I haven't got any time to mess around. I'm just going to get straight in with the Facebook likes. So these are the people that have liked the Facebook page since the last episode. We have Mike Westphal, Amanda Louise Davis, Gabe Raguse, Tony Dixon, Johnny Burkett, Timothy Bolton, Susan Bratch Letitia, Tim Bomber, Chelsea Groover, Deep Squelch, seriously, that's meant to be a name, Jim Fanning, and Jason Orange. That's right, Jason Orange. If you're in the UK, maybe in Australia, New Zealand, and parts of Europe, you might know that Jason Orange is a member of Take That, one of the biggest boy bands of the 90s. They're still going today, and they're still going strong. It's not that Jason Orange, sadly. Well, not sadly, because I've got this Jason Orange. He's just as good, if not better. Tell you a story, though. I met Jason Orange when I was in Thailand. Oh, it was about 2000. It was 2000, and I was in Thailand, and Jason Orange was riding a scooter, and he parked up outside where I was eating, and I saw him, that's Jason Orange. And I went over, shook his hand. I was always a fan of Take That, and you've got to forgive me for that. And that was the famous Jason Orange, not the cool Jason Orange, the one that we all love, who liked the Facebook page. Thank you to all those people for liking the Facebook page. It does make a big difference. I know I say that every episode, but it's true every episode, so that's why I say it. So, I've had another message from Josh Allen, who you may remember from last episode. He sent me a link to a YouTube clip, and it's Gene Shepherd reading out excerpts of In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. It's like an audiobook on YouTube. If you're a fan of the film A Christmas Story, and of course you are, because it's fantastic, that film was based on the book In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash, written by Gene Shepherd. So if you want to go on YouTube, I'll put the links up on Facebook, but if you want to go on YouTube, you can listen to him reading the stories, and they're really good. I've got a copy of In God We Trust. I bought it years ago, and I really recommend it. So thank you very much for that, Josh. I really appreciate it. So two episodes ago, I gave you the offer of a Christmas card, a handmade Christmas card from my lovely 4-year-old daughter, Robin, and it was going to be signed by her, and I was going to post it out to you, and all you had to do in return was record a Christmas story for me and send it through. No one bothered. I was distressed. Robin was distressed. My wife was distressed because me and Robin were distressed. She didn't really care about the card situation. That's her problem. So again, I renewed the offer last week, and this is what I got for my pleas.
Hey Jack, it's Tony. I've got a Christmas shame story for you. Once upon a time, there was this awesome Christmas podcast, and the poor host was begging people to send him stories, even to the point of bribing them with a Christmas card from his 4-year-old daughter. And none of them could be bothered. So now, this poor 4-year-old child is going to have a broken heart for Christmas. For shame, people. For shame.
So there we go. So I emailed Tony a message back saying, well, Tony, I can't lie to you, but that's not exactly what I was after. But I will be playing your clip, which means you do deserve a card. So I sent him that. I actually loved the clip, but I think he felt so guilty from my reply, he actually did send me a Christmas story. It's only a short one, and I've got to play this for you first.
Hey Jack, it's Tony again. I have a Santa is not coming to town for you. I was about 10 years old, I'd say, and I'd been a naughty boy and checked in the closets and such, and I already knew what I was getting for Christmas. So after I opened my presents, I kind of figured out Santa's not real. Well, it just so happened my mom was going to start telling me that, and I just kind of cut her off. It's like, yeah, I know. I was too ashamed to let her sit there and tell the story, so that's what I get for being naughty.
What I like about this story is I just picture Tony there, and his mum's going, right, Tony, we need to discuss Santa. I know, Mum. I've been through the cupboards. Don't bother. It's over. Forget it, Mum. I know that's not what happened, but I like the idea. Thank you so much for sending that through, Tony. I really do appreciate it. And you will, of course, be getting a Christmas card. I've already posted it, and hopefully you'll get it in the next couple of days. So, boys and girls, you're probably there thinking, well, at least he got one story through after all his begging and pleading. Well, no. I got two. Now, this next one was sent in by Benji Pearson. And something I need to tell you is Benji Pearson has self-appointed himself a role, and it's an interesting one, because we've already got our American correspondent, we've already got our Scandinavian correspondent. Benji Pearson is the self-appointed American Scandinavian correspondent. I'm not making it up. I'm not. He emailed me, told me that's his new role. And don't forget, kids, all the roles here at the Total Christmas Podcast are self-appointed. So it's not up to me to decide. If he wants to be the self-appointed American, what was it? Whatever he is, if he wants to be that, I can't stop him. I've tried. I couldn't. Those are the rules, kids. Anyway, this is Benji's story.
Hi, Jack. I wanted to give you my quick history with Christmas trees. As a kid, my favorite part of Christmas was always going to get a nice white flocked Christmas tree from the stand. Then we would come home and decorate it, me trying my best, but only could reach so high. And the next day, my mom would have the tree perfectly decorated. As I got older, I got a job at a craft store working in the Christmas tree department. That's where I met my wife, in the Christmas trees, literally. Then I went to school and studied design. I learned how to design better Christmas trees. Now, I'm the one that decorates my mom's tree, and I have lots of fun with it. Merry Christmas!
Now, Benji has actually asked for a message for his kids for Christmas from Robin and Juno. So, here's Robin and Juno.
Hello, Benji. It's Robin and Juno. I want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas.
I want to wish you and your family Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to Joseph.
Merry Christmas, Joseph.
Hi, Mum. Jared.
Kirsten.
And Charlie Bjorn. I hope you have a wonderful new year.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So thanks again for that lovely story, Benji. Do you know what? I loved that. I really did. Because as you get older, Christmas changes, you know? Like when you're a kid, it's all about presents and that. When you're in your teens, it's all about, I don't know, getting drunk, that sort of stuff. Then as you get older and you actually have your own kids, it's all about the kids. And I guess for Benji, as a kid, part of Christmas was putting up the tree and doing a hash job of it and getting his mum to finish off the tree. And now it's his job to do the tree. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know. Okay, so now I have another one of these. Now, this listener chose to email through their story, which means I don't have to send them a Christmas card, so I'm happy about that. And they've also asked to remain anonymous. I don't know why. When you hear the story, I think you'll wonder why too. But it is a nice story, and I'm going to read it to you now. I've always thought my belief just slowly faded with time, but I think I've pinpointed the last final moments of childhood belief. The last of the dominoes to fall. The last straw to break the camel's back. The last, I don't know, the last thing to do a thing. You see, I'm the youngest in a large family. By the time I was 6, my closest siblings were 10 and 12, and my older siblings were out of the house raising children of their own, so there were always plenty of nods and winks when the big man was mentioned. When I was 10, I was convinced that I had the real phone number to Santa's workshop and nearly had to fight off other kids at school for thinking I was too innocent. When I was 12 though, my dad asked me the simple age-old question, "So what would you like Santa Claus to bring you this year?" For years I've thought that I was protecting my dad's feelings and pretending for his sake, but looking back, as a father, I realised he was asking to see where my belief really was. That year, I didn't know what I wanted, so I just said that Santa will surprise me. Christmas morning came, and there, next to the tree, was a brand new motorised scooter. The stand-up type, not a Vespa type. I looked at my parents in shock, and I could see in their eyes that this was from them. I hugged them both, and in that moment knew that the Clement Clark Moore story was not how it happened. That said, today I do believe in Santa Claus, in the way best explained in Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. As an adult, and especially as a parent and once struggling university student, I can truly say that there were times in those early years when Santa's elves visited our house and brought joy and magic to our children. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Now, wasn't that a beautiful story? Yes, it was, in case you were asking. Yes, it was. So, thank you to my anonymous listener for sending that one through. No idea why you wanted to keep your name out of it, but that's your business, not mine. Now it's time for this.
This is the most wonderful present I've ever received.
Regular listeners to the show will be well aware that this whole feature was concocted by my devious brain to try and get people to send me ideas for what to get my wife for Christmas. Now, Frank the Tank said this. What to get your wife for Christmas? Why don't you ask her? Well, thanks for that, Frank. Thanks for nothing. Goodness. See, here's the thing. It's not a surprise, is it? I could ask her. She'll tell me. I get it. Boring. So I've given up. That's why we're back to the old jingle. I've given up. But having said that, Benji Pearson, he's non-stop, this gentleman. Benji Pearson, our American Scandinavian correspondent, posted on my Facebook page a list of 52 clutter-free gifts. And it's great. It's such a good idea, and I will post that on... I'm not going to read them all out to you. Should I? Do you want me to? I'm not going to. Tough. I'm going to post that on the Facebook page, so it might give you some ideas, and that saves me having to do this segment. Or does it? Because in the last week, I've come up with something fantastic to get. Now, there is nothing in this world more annoying than... Hang on a minute. No, do you know what? There are things more annoying. There are few things in this world that are more annoying, actually thinking about it. Hold on a sec. There are loads of things in this world that are more annoying than what I'm about to tell you. But it is still annoying. So, you know when you spend your hard-earned cash on a friend or relative's kids and you don't get a thank you? Right? It's not good. It's not good. I'm not impressed. Do you know what I mean? I've spent a fortune on them. Well, never a fortune, is it? We've all discussed that I'm a cheapskate. Okay? I've been to Poundland. I've bought them something cheap, but I've wrapped it up nice, made it look like I spent good money on it, and you can't even be bothered to send me a thank you. You're bang out of order. This was brought to my attention by a friend of mine. What it is you buy a pack of thank you cards, okay, but they're for colouring in. So what you do is you give them to your friends for their kids, and then they colour them in, and then they send them back to you to say thank you. So the company that was brought to my attention is called The Illustrated Saying. And they sell loads of different cards and things to colour in for kids and adults. It's a lovely website, actually. But one of the things they're doing for Christmas is you get a pack of 8 postcard-sized cards for kids to colour in. And they're like a good stocking filler. So what you could do is give those to your friends or relatives, and then you're pretty much guaranteed, I should hope, to get a thank you card. Obviously, don't necessarily make that the main gift, but it's like a nice stocking filler. And that's what it says on the website, that they make, you know, that they're a stocking filler. £3 for 8 cards, that's pretty decent. I guess if you live outside of the UK, the postage is going to be a bit more, but I'm sure there's other companies out there that do similar things. I think it's a great idea. And also, if like your kids, because when I was a kid, I loved Christmas so much, right? I loved it. I loved it so much, right? But I hated, and I really mean hated, having to do the thank you cards. Sometimes it'd be like a couple of days after Christmas, and you're thinking, do you know what? I wish there wasn't a Christmas, because I cannot sit here and write these thank you cards. Now, if your kids are like me, then why not you get them these cards, put them in their stocking, and then it's a bit of fun for them to colour it in. And then they've got to write on the back of it. It'll take them seconds. They'll be fine. Yeah, the website's called theillustratedsaying.co.uk. Have a look. I think they're fantastic. It's a great idea. It's a bit passive-aggressive. And at Christmas, we like a bit of passive-aggressive. We don't like a bit of passive-aggressive. Let's just have a bit of goodwill and peace on earth. Thank you. Now it's this. So boys and girls, a few months ago, Shelley Arnold, one of my dear listeners, she sent me a message about her Christmas village and sent me some pictures of it. And it is fantastic. So the pictures she sent me were from last year, and she said she was just getting ready to start setting up the village for this year. And I said, would it be possible to have a short interview once you've set up the village so we can talk about it for the listeners to hear about it? She said yes, and that is what I'm going to play for you now. This is the interview I had with the delightful Shelley Arnold and her husband, Frank the Tank. Here we go. Okay, so I've got a treat for you now, boys and girls. I'm here with one of our listeners. I've got Shelley Arnold, and she has the most amazing Christmas village. So first off, Shelley, can you tell us what year you first started doing the Christmas village?
I started the village in 1992, and it started with two pieces from a home interiors decorating party that I went to, and I bought a church and a house, and it started out with on a card table.
And you had just the two pieces. And that was what, nearly 30 years ago then?
Yeah, so 1992. And then I started to expand it when I was Christmas shopping with my sisters and my mom and at the Target store. And they sold It's a Wonderful Life buildings. And my husband and I have been watching that movie at every Christmas Eve since we were dating. So I started collecting that village. Then it just has grown from there.
So after It's a Wonderful Life, do you want to tell our listeners the other films that you've got in the Christmas village?
We also have some pieces that are Department 56 from A Christmas Story. We have Ralphie's School, Ralphie's House, the Bumpus's House, Higby's Department Store, and the Chop Suey Palace, as well as the school. I don't know. I think I said the school. And then we also have the Griswold Family, the Christmas Vacation series, which is the Griswold House and Todd and Margo's house. We have Cousin Eddie's RV, and we have the garage. I would like to get a few more pieces, but they're getting harder and harder to find. In fact, last year when we were looking, the Todd and Margo house that I have was for sale on Amazon for over $1,300. So.
Sorry, you cut out then. You paid how much for it?
About 50.
Wow. So it's an investment then?
It is becoming quite an investment, yes.
Yeah, well, so I received an email from Shelley over a month ago telling me that she was starting work on the village. Can you tell the listeners how long it actually took you to put the whole thing together?
This year it only took me about 3 weeks. That's actually working full-time and then, you know, working on the village when I'm not at work. Taken me about 6 weeks when I've been doing carving mountains and that kind of thing, so.
So some of it you've made yourself then?
Yes.
And is that the stuff at the back I can see?
Some of it, yes. Some of those pieces I did not carve, but some of them I did. I've been kind of mixing and matching and until I, you know, get a kind of a look that I like. And this year I wanted to add another row of northern lights. So I have two sets of lights behind the mountains. One set is green and one is purple to make it look like the Aurora Borealis.
So when you say carving, what material do you use them?
I used white styrofoam sheets and then just stacked them and glued them until I got the height and then just started carving.
Okay. So you didn't mention when you listed earlier, you've also got Whoville, but that's off to one side.
Yeah, I forgot that. That's on, as we call it over here, it's on the other side of the tracks.
Okay.
So it's on the other side of the railroad track is Whoville, and I've asked for some skyscrapers for Christmas this year, and if I get them, then I will move Whoville into my guest room, and then I'm going to try to set up New York City in the spot where Whoville is next year.
From the film Elf, you were saying earlier.
Yes, yes. I'm going to add some of the Elf pieces, but some of the other pieces from Department 56 aren't specific for Elf, such as you can get the Empire State Building and the Chrysler Building and the Brooklyn Bridge. So some pretty significant pieces, and they're pretty expensive.
I can imagine. Sorry, I didn't ask. Can you tell me what room you're in now then?
This is office.
Oh, okay. So you just keep it in the office?
Yes. I take the office, and when I designed the office, I designed a little, where I'm sitting right now, a little desk space that we can use, because we have a business. My husband and I have an electrical contracting business, so we need to have, you know, access to our accounts. And then we set up the village and the rest of the office, and we lose the office for about 3 to 4 months every year to the village.
So after you've put it all up, how long do you leave it up for then?
Probably about 3 months. 3 months total it's up. So if it takes me a month to put up, then it's there for 4 months.
And then how long does it take to pack away?
It's not bad. No, it's probably less than a week.
Okay, so still a little while then.
Yeah.
Have you thought about leaving it out all year round?
Not really. I can't even imagine the dust.
I was going to say, that's the problem, isn't it? The dust, because it's so intricate. There's so many pieces there.
Yeah, by the time I'm ready to put it away, there are little tiny cobwebs going from building to building to building. So yeah, the dust is pretty crazy.
So tell me, what is your favorite piece?
Oh my goodness. I think that my favorite piece is probably the Hawthorne Village, Bedford Falls Bank. I just love the look of it. If you know me, you would know that I'm pretty particular about symmetry and things being exactly how they are. I've researched the placement of buildings in Bedford Falls a lot, to the point where I actually moved the bank into a spot that it really doesn't belong, because I wanted to be able to see it better, because I love the bank. It's so beautiful.
So who gets to see the village?
Unfortunately, this year, probably not as many people as we would like.
This year.
But yeah, there will be some people coming over to see it. And, you know, we're going to, if they want to come over, we're going to do appointments. And we'll require that they wear a mask, and we'll wear masks, and just try to do it on a safe basis. Last year, we had, I think, 3 nights or 3 weekends that we did open houses. And people I just posted it on Facebook, and then people would just kind of drop in whenever they wanted. And Frank has a display that he does outside, so they come to see the outside lights as well. And we have cookies and hot chocolate. Yeah, we were close to 100 people come last year.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. A little guy that we know, he's, I think, about maybe close to 3. He kept taking the Grinch. I couldn't find the Grinch. In the next morning, I actually found him in the bookshelf. So he moved the Grinch out of the village and into the bookshelf. It was kind of funny.
Well, I guess everyone that wants to see it can see it, because you post the pictures on Facebook.
Yes, and I'll post lots of pictures if they want to see it.
You were saying that there's a group that you're a member of.
There's two. There's two groups on Facebook that are kind of private groups, you know, that for people that build villages. One is a Department 56 group, and one is just called the Christmas Villages and Decorations group. So they get a lot of good ideas from them. You know, we kind of share ideas and share frustrations and that kind of thing. Like, if you look underneath the village, you can imagine the wires. So I have about 112 buildings and over 24 animated pieces, and all of the cords underneath the village. The managing the cords is pretty critical. So this year there was a man on one of the groups that he makes cords, that so I can plug 25 things into this one cord. So I bought 4 of them, and it's really worked well. And luckily I have an electrician for a husband, so that's been helpful as well.
Well, I was going to say, so does Frank do the wiring then?
Well, I climb under there and plug everything in, but there are certain things that I need his help with, such as some of the animated pieces that are, you know, via an adapter. I mean, we've kind of wired them all together, so it's a little bit easier into one adapter.
You mentioned Department 56, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
In the UK, that's not something I've heard of. So could you explain to people that might not know what that is exactly?
Okay, so Department 56 is actually a company. It's a brand
that sells
village pieces. And they kind of have this system where every year they retire so many. They have different groups, like they have a snow village, and then they have the North Pole, and they have different buildings that belong within those groups of villages. And then they have all of the trees and accessories. Like I have 22 of their very, very large trees. So you can see those big trees there.
Uh-huh.
Those are Department 56 trees. Their scale of their figurines is, it's a little wonky. Like if you put them right close to a house, sometimes the figurines, in order to get detail, look much larger, like they would never fit through the door. You have to have some finesse about where you place your figurines so that they don't look too out of place.
Yeah, that makes sense. Department 56 is like the main one. Have you got lots of, is there other companies as well that are as prominent, or is that the main?
There's two. I think that, well, maybe three. I mentioned Hawthorne Village before, and that's more of a club type of a thing. It's a mm-hmm. subscription where you subscribe and then they send you, you know, a building every so often until you cancel. And then there's Lemax. Lemax is more of a something that is accessible by anyone. You can get those at Walmart or, you know what I mean, some of the mm-hmm. The Michaels stores and that kind of thing. So I would say in terms of popularity, it's probably Department 56 first, and then Lemax, and then some of the other ones. And Kohl's store has their own. And there are a lot of people from the UK that are in these village groups that covet a lot of the things that we have here, and they can't get them. If they can, it's really, really expensive.
Yeah, I guess the shipping alone would be enough, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's pretty much everything I wanted to ask. And so your plans for the future are just to add the New York scenes from the film Elf, you were saying?
Yeah, I think that we're probably going to kind of add a little bit to this front corner. If Frank had his way, you'd just make like this narrow strip from the back door into the kitchen and everything else is village, but we have to have some space. But so I think I might add on a little bit to that, but pretty much this is it. This year we added a second train. So we have two trains now, and I think that's probably about it. We'll add New York City and then call it good.
It is good. It's fantastic. Could you email me some pictures so that I could share them with the listeners?
I would absolutely love to, yes.
I would love that as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. No, I've really appreciated it. So I had to cut it off a bit sharp there because we carried on chatting straight after and it was about completely different stuff. I want to just say I had a lovely time chatting to Shelley, and she sort of was showing me through the camera on her computer the various aspects of the village, and it's just a work of art. It really is. I will be posting the pictures on Facebook so you can see them for yourselves. And hopefully maybe that's given you some ideas of maybe doing your own Christmas village. So well done, Shelley. Thank you so much. And it was a real pleasure chatting to you and Frank. Now it's this. Hey, you've missed these, haven't you? Brace yourselves. Here it comes. Yeah, hold on tight, kids. Here it comes. How do we know the road to Bethlehem was slippery? Because Mary got there on her ass. Oh, bit cheeky that one, wasn't it, eh? 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 Oh, dear. Yeah, sorry about that, kids. Let's just move on.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas or
humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
So in the last episode, I mentioned that Curtis Parrish had recommended a version of A Christmas Carol, and I said I was going to watch it this year, and I have. And that's this week's Christmas Carol, and it's called A Christmas Carol. It's set in modern day Scotland, and I've got the top of my notes here, and I don't quite know, after I watched it, I wrote this down, what a pile of dog's hair. I don't quite know what that means. What a pile of dog's hair. I don't know what those dogs are hitting. What a pile of dog's hair. What do they? I don't know. I don't know why I've written that. But this is both rubbish and garbage. So that's how bad it is. So I'm going to go through it. You might enjoy listening to me rant about something rubbish. I don't get a kick out of slating things, okay? I'm not that kind of guy. I don't want to come here and just be snarky about stuff. That's not the way I am. Well, It is, but I don't try not to be like that on the podcast. But you've given me no option, Curtis. I've sat through this, and now I'm going to tell the dear listener how I feel. So, I'll tell you a bit about it. It's set in modern day, and Scrooge runs a whiskey distillery. Now, Bob is his assistant, and she's a lady. I'm cool with that, that's absolutely fine. Tim isn't Tiny. He is actually Bob Cratchit's husband, and he's sadly got cancer. Fred isn't his nephew. Fred is actually his uncle, and we find out at some point during it that his parents died, so Scrooge had to go and live with his uncle. He doesn't have a sister, no Fan, she's not in it at all. And his love when he was a younger man she's called Nell, not Belle, and she died apparently not long after they split up. I mean, those are the main differences. There's a couple of other little things, like for example, when the portly gentlemen, they're not portly gentlemen, they're actually two very attractive young ladies, they come in asking for a donation, and he gives them a huge donation right at the start, but he gives all his workers bonuses as a donation to charity because he can use it as a tax write-off. So now I'm just going to run through everything that's wrong with it. Here we go. First off, I mean, this is really low budget, okay? So I'm not holding that against them. I'm not holding the fact that they didn't spend a lot of money on it, but the effects aren't actually that bad. So they've clearly spent some money on it, but not necessarily where they could have in the script, for example. The guy that plays Ebenezer Scrooge, he actually wrote this, and some of it's fine, some of it I'm not impressed with, but he certainly hams up the role of Ebenezer. He's chewing the scenery. This is the bit where he sees his old business partner, Jacob Marley. Here he is.
No, this can't be! You're dead! Dead!
That's not nice.
Dead!
See, he's really getting into it there. The next thing, don't know why this bothers me, but he says bah humbug 9 times. Now you might think, well, that's only 9 times. Yeah, but in the book, Scrooge only says it 6 times, okay? And I did the research on that. It's sort of 6.5 because there's one time where he's going to say it, but let's move on from that. It doesn't seem right. He's saying bah humbug all the time, and this is modern day, and you don't hear anyone say bah humbug unless they're copying Scrooge. So there's that. Also, his hair's really distracting. He's got really long hair tied back in a ponytail, but like one half of it, the side of his head, is all hanging down. It sort of keeps One good thing about it, which is also a bad thing about it, is the Ghost of Christmas Past comes in and she is wearing fishnet stockings and suspenders. And like, obviously I'm not going to complain about that, but what's that all about? So there's a part in the Ghost of Christmas Past where Scrooge is living in New York. I don't know if they actually went to New York. You know, they could have used stock footage of the buildings. Most of it's inside. When they're outside, you can see the New York skyline in the background. But they could have superimposed that. Like I said, the effects aren't that bad. But this is the weird thing. The Ghost of Christmas Past ain't there with him. And I'm wondering if they sort of flew over, filmed a few scenes in New York, but didn't have enough money to fly the Ghost of Christmas Past over with him. I don't know what that's about. Because she's just a disembodied voice at this point. She's not actually there with him. They could have easily filmed a lot of those scenes in Scotland and just pretended it was New York. No one would have been any the wiser. But, you know, she's not there. And then when it's back in Scotland, she's there again. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. The Ghost of Christmas Present is incredibly camp, but to the point where it's like 80s stereotypical gay. And that's, I just think that's really outdated. Listen to this line. Listen to this.
I am the Goose of Christmas Present.
The Goose.
Nickname, because I love a good stuffing. Oh, look at me go. I shouldn't be sharing my secrets with the likes of you.
Like, what is that? We've moved on beyond that. Things are better now. You know, there's no reason for that sort of behaviour. It's a more enlightened society these days. So there's another bit in it where you've got this village where Bob Cratchit lives, and the Ghost of Christmas Present is sort of showing him the people in the village, and you've got this guy who's trying to make ends meet by not begging, he's just trying to find pennies on the road. And they mention it, and they talk about it like he is just trying to find pennies. It's almost as if, oh, there's a pound coin there, won't pick that up, I'll just pick up the pennies that I see. And he's got this little bag of pennies that he's running around with. Very strange, because he'd probably make a lot more money just sitting there begging than running around trying to find pennies. But he's trying to save all these pennies so he can buy a little girl in the village a horse. This family with the little girl, that wants a horse, how are they going to afford to keep a horse? You could buy a horse, okay? I'm not going to say horses are cheap, but you could buy a horse. But then you've got to pay every month for the field, the food, like the grooming and crud like that. Okay, right, keep moving. So the spirit of Christmas yet to come is just a disembodied voice. Again, you don't see him at all. There's no shadow, there's no guy in a hooded coat. That's fine, you know. It actually works quite well. I didn't hate that, but I didn't love it. Next one. A lot of the way Scrooge talks is very oldie-worldy. Let me give you an example.
What nightmare is this you cursed me with?
See, if this is set in modern day, then talk like it's modern day. But don't start talking like it's Victorian England. What I'm saying is, it's one or the other. Make up your mind. I'm not going to dwell on it. Let's keep moving. There's a bit where he's walking along and he's got an umbrella in the snow. I've never seen anyone with an umbrella in the snow. It's not a big thing, but it's a thing. Going back to the bit with the guy with the pennies, right? He's such a nice guy that he's trying to find pennies so he can buy this horse. He's collected his pennies and he's trying to give them to the guy who's got a horse. But the guy with the horse is so lovely, he's going to give the horse to the little girl anyway. And he's sort of saying, no, you don't have to give me your pennies. And it's like, he's got this bag of pennies. It looks probably like he's got about a quid's worth of pennies. That's not going to buy you a horse. But he's like, no, take the pennies. And the bloke's more like, I don't want your blooming pennies. They're more trouble than they're worth, to be honest, mate. Okay, let's move on from the pennies. There's a bit at the end where I think it's an ex-girlfriend. They don't really make it perfectly clear, but, you know, got to read between the lines. They're driving along in the car and they're going to Uncle Fred's for Christmas dinner. They pull over. She had to pull over for this. They couldn't drive to Uncle Fred's and then give it to him. She takes off her scarf and gives it to him as a gift. And to be honest, I felt like that was a little bit of a rip-off of A Muppet's Christmas Carol, to be honest. He didn't go, a gift for me, but you could tell that's what he was going for, you know, the whole of it. Let's move on. Okay, I'm going to give you some good points, right? One, it's short. Two, the intro credits, they've got an animated bit at the start. It's actually quite good, but that sort of lulls you into a false sense of security. You sort of think, oh, you know, this is quite good, a bit classy, this is going to be good, and then it ain't. Number three, there's a lot of attractive ladies in it. It's all of them, all the girls in it, they're pretty girls, you know, that's good, I guess. Number four, the effects aren't awful. So I've mentioned that already, but, you know, I'm saying it again. And number five, the music is by Roger Taylor. And you're thinking, who's Roger Taylor? I'll tell you, if you don't know, he is the drummer in Queen. And I thought, well, that's quite impressive. Turns out he's married to the lady that plays Bob Cratchit. And she's quite an attractive girl. Well, they're all attractive. That's my point. All the girls in this are attractive. So I can't, you know, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I can't do it because it'll kill me. Oh, this is the other thing. Right, get this. Okay, so aside from Roger Taylor, I've not heard of one person who's involved in this film apart from Bonnie Wright. Now, if you've never heard of Bonnie Wright, she played Ginny Weasley in the Harry Potter films. Now, she's in this, and she's got her name second in the credits, as if she's like one of the main players. She plays his sweetheart from when he was younger. Like I mentioned earlier, she's called Nell, not Belle. And she's barely in it. She does a decent enough job acting, you know, she's fine. But she's barely in it, and yet she's second in the credits. Now, this is what I don't understand. At the end of it, Scrooge gets back with an old girlfriend of his that we know nothing about. There is a very short flashback, not part of the Ghost of Christmas Past, I might add. A very short flashback where Scrooge is thinking about this girl that he went to the fair with when he was younger. Not a lot younger, but a bit younger. He ends up getting back together with her at the end of it, right? Why doesn't he get back together with Belle? That's what it should be. Because that's, you know, that's the main one of his love. That's got all the Ghost of Christmas Past stuff. But like I told you earlier, she dies, right? So why? Why did she have to die? And I really don't understand why, unless it was like they just couldn't get her to come and film in Scotland that one scene of her and him together in the future. I don't know. I don't know why they chose to go with this way. It makes no sense to me. Because I really, really dislike this version. I'm not going to spend too long talking about it. That's pretty much the end of this segment. If you want to go and check it out, it's not that long. It's 80 odd minutes. It's not going to take up too much of your time, but there's so many better versions out there. You know, you could watch Muppet's Christmas Carol again, or you could watch Alistair Sim or George C. Scott and avoid this. Now, here's the thing. You may think this is the worst version I've ever seen. Well, just this week, I've watched an even worse one, but I'm going to save that. Because you don't want to hear me in the next episode ranting and raving about an even worse version of A Christmas Carol. So let's just say, if you want to watch this one, that's your problem. It's on Amazon, A Christmas Carol 2018. It is what it is. If you want to give it a shot, I'm not going to stop you. So boys and girls, when I started this podcast, the original intention was to have lots of different segments, and one of those segments was to do the occasional movie review. Now, so far, the only movies I've reviewed have been versions of A Christmas Carol, like the one I did a minute ago. But today, I am actually doing a movie review of a completely different movie, and it's nothing to do with A Christmas Carol. Hard to believe, kids, but these things do occasionally happen. So the film I want to talk about is called Christmas Again. There's actually a couple of films out there called Christmas Again. This one's got a comma, so it's Christmas, comma, again. So the film was written and directed by Charles Pokel and stars Kentucker Audley and Hannah Gross. And this is the blurb. A heartbroken Christmas tree salesman returns to New York City, hoping to put his past behind him. Living in a trailer and working the night shift, he begins to spiral downwards until the saving of a mysterious woman and some colourful customers rescue him from self-destruction. You know, the older I get and the more films I see, the less impressed I am these days. But when I watched this film for the first time last Christmas, I just completely fell in love with the film. And it's very low budget and very little happens. And it's not a particularly happy film either, kids. This is not a Hallmark film. This is something completely different. But I can't recommend it higher. I really can't. If I could, I'd get out there and send every single one of you a copy of this DVD, because it's just such a great film, in my opinion. Sadly, you might watch it and think, what? This is absolute dog's pants. And you might think that. And do you know what? If you do, there's nothing I can do about that. But I think it's wonderful. So the director, Charles Pokel, spent 3 years in New York working a Christmas tree stand. And the film is actually filmed on a real Christmas tree stand. And some of the customers that are filmed are actually real customers that are just there to buy a Christmas tree. I've told you the blurb, and that pretty much is the plot. I can't really give much else away. The lead character is called Noel. He works a Christmas tree stand. It becomes clear as you watch the film that he's broken up with his girlfriend who worked the stand with him in previous years, and he's completely been devastated by it. And he really does seem to be having a hard time. The acting is nothing short of phenomenal, in my opinion. It's just brilliant. Then one night, he finds a girl who's passed out on a park bench, and he takes her back to his trailer to look after her. And the story goes on from there. I don't want to give too much of it away, but don't expect this to be a Hallmark romance, because that ain't what you're going to get with this film. It's a melancholy film, but it is just so nuanced and subtle, and you can probably tell by the tone of my voice just how much I love this film. And I think if you give it a try and you give it your complete focus, you will enjoy it too. There's a few things I want to say about it. There's not a massive amount I can say, but there's a few things I want to say about it. There's a couple of bits that really stand out for me. One of them is they've used a special type of lens filter, and when you've got like Christmas lights in the background, it gives each individual light like a triangular appearance, and that's a really clever effect because it sort of suggests like Christmas trees. I really like that. There's just a very brief scene where Lydia, the main female character, she appears at the window, and the way she's lit, it sort of looks like she's like an angel, like a halo. And it's, I don't want to sort of read too much into it, but it's kind of like she's this angel that's appearing, you know, to see him. There's another scene, like an extended scene where Noel and Lydia are delivering Christmas trees, and it's just so real, you know. You're following this guy and this girl as they deliver trees to real people, and they're just so happy to receive their trees. So for a film where very little happens, I found it totally engrossing, and I've got to stop saying I love it, because you're gonna be, yeah, we get it, Jack, we get it, you love it, all right, you love it, sort yourself out, Jack. I'm sorry. The first time I saw this film, I thought, do you know what? I've got to put this on the podcast. And this was like 3 months before I even started doing the podcast. If you're looking for something different, but something real, then this is the perfect film for you. Now, I was lucky to have found this film, and I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, aren't even aware the film exists. Well, now that you've heard this, you are aware of it. I suggest that you go out there and you watch it. And if you don't like it, that's cool. But I think you will. I really do. Now, something really special, boys and girls. So when I started doing my segment on this film, I started writing bits down about 4 months ago. And then on a whim, I thought, do you know what, why don't I see if I can contact the director and see if he'll do an interview with me? And do you know what? He did. And here's the interview I did with him. Just the first thing, I want to check I've got this right. So it's Charles Pokel. Is that right?
Yeah, you got it right. Yep.
Cool. Okay, well, thanks for joining me. So the film was released in 2015, and you spent 3 years beforehand working on a Christmas store. Was it your own Christmas store, a Christmas tree store?
Yeah. So as soon as I knew I wanted to write a film that took place at a Christmas tree lot in New York, I came from the documentary background. So I was kind of over obsessed with authenticity. And I didn't feel like I could write this story if I at least didn't like really live that experience of selling trees and like doing that in New York. So I started just by interviewing other people who were selling trees and trying to spend time shadowing them for like a day. But I didn't feel like I was really getting at the real kind of experience of what that was like and how that might affect my characters. And I also knew that I thought it might be a little more lucrative than it turned out to be. But so then I thought, oh, why don't I just open my own Christmas tree stand and I'll shoot the film there and I can use the money from selling trees to help fund the film. And I also, you know, I knew that I wanted complete control over the set and the location. And if I was trying to shoot at somebody else's Christmas tree stand, you know, they're concerned about selling their trees and making a buck and getting out of there. They don't want some camera guy in their way trying to, you know, hold up, like, can we put that tree back or something? I've got a continuity issue, you know? And I knew that that would just be really a hard path to navigate. So yeah, so for kind of all those three reasons, I was like, just open your own stand. But it was a lot of work and it ended up really delaying the process of making the movie, but ultimately I think made it better.
So that's right, what I said, 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up running it for, I think, 5 or 6 years total. It was 3 years and I think we shot it the fourth year. Yeah, I think that's right. So I ran it for 3 years while still writing the script. Then the fourth year, yeah, we shot it. And then the fifth year I ran it anyway, because I enjoyed it at that point and I had connections with the neighborhood. And I also knew that when it eventually came out, I'd want to still have it for promotional reasons.
Okay.
And then I did it a sixth year when the film finally came out in theaters. And that was really fun. It was this like cross promotion type thing where people would come and buy a tree and I'd say, hey, you know, go home on iTunes, check it out.
Did you say it was lucrative or not?
Not really, no. It was also, no, it was not. Well, I can see how it could be for certain people. A lot of the way, you know, I learned a lot more about the business side of it, which wasn't really something I wanted to know a lot about, was forced to. Yeah, the first year was kind of disastrous. I ordered too many trees and was just, you know, so the second year was just about digging myself out of that hole. It took really the third year to be like, okay, now I get how this business runs and how I can actually not lose money on it. And that's when I felt confident enough that I could run a business at the same time as shooting a film,
right?
Which still was not the easiest thing to do.
So when you were doing it, were you doing 12-hour shifts then?
Yeah, because you can't lock up the trees, you know, like what are you going to... So yeah, it's basically the night person is almost just like a night watchman.
Were you doing the night shift?
I did it. I tried to do it at least once or twice every season, just almost to like out of duty. But I mainly just did the day shifts. And then the last year or two, I would maybe only do 1 or 2 days a week because I always had a staff of people that were selling the trees. Especially the first 2 years when I had still my documentary job. But, and then weekends we were swamped. You know, we might go on a Wednesday, you might sell 3 trees the whole day. And then on Saturday, you sell 35. So the weekends I would, you know, regardless of whether I was like supposed to be working, scheduled or whatever, I would usually find myself there helping out my employees, just, you know, slugging trees because it was so busy.
Sure. So can I ask why you chose to do this story?
Yeah.
Where the idea came from?
Yeah, I was working in documentaries, living in New York City, and I wanted to pivot into some sort of scripted film, whether it be a short or a feature. I was thinking feature, and I just was trying to think of what was something I hadn't seen before that I was interested myself in seeing. And after, I think, maybe a year or two living in New York, I started to pay attention to the Christmas tree lots that would pop up there on the sidewalks every year, which... You know, they're not unique in that they happen all over the world, but they're very unique in that people in New York, nobody has cars for the most part. So you don't really have much choice of where, like, there's the Christmas tree that's closest to your apartment, and that's kind of where you're stuck getting it from. There's no, like, let's hop in a car and go somewhere else. There's no, let's cut it down. There's no, you know, maybe, like, are you going to take it on the subway? Like, So it's this, it's a very kind of specific world. And yeah, these guys come down and they live in the campers and stuff, and they work 12-hour shifts and they kind of grind for 30 days and then head out of town. I just thought it was such a unique setting for a film. And it was actually originally supposed to be more of like a neo-noir. And then as I started fleshing out the story and the script, the characters were just the things I was gravitating towards, and a kind of the silly plot of this. It had a kind of a plot that involved the boyfriend, Derek, a lot more, Lydia's boyfriend. Yeah, it just didn't feel like, I just wasn't really loving that story and just kind of pulled it back and focused really on Noel and his experience selling trees and the customers he was interacting with.
You said you worked on the tree stand for 3 years. Did it actually take you that long to write the story then? Or could you have, if you'd had the money, could you have started earlier, do you think?
Was it about money? You know, it gives you a perspective when you hear like stories about people in Hollywood spending a long time on projects, you know, like James Cameron worked 20 years on Avatar or something. Like you get a sense of what that really means, which is like you have the idea, you sit down, you start working on it, and then you might not touch it for 6 months. You know, 3 years, but a lot of it didn't really happen until the last probably 4 or 5 months. One of the reasons was I was still working in documentaries full time at a production company in New York. And it was just, it was full time. And I was trying to like inch this script forward, you know, nights and weekends. And, you know, I'd get really excited. I would get really excited leading up to Christmas thinking that I'd have it done in time. And then when I wouldn't have it done in time, I would kind of put it aside for 4 or 5 months and then dig it out again. And it was just this kind of cycle for about 2.5 years where I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to finish this thing if I don't change my habits and change my kind of my time around. And so I left that documentary film company, which kind of opened up my ability to finish the script and really focus on that.
So I want to talk about the actors. So how did you find the actors, like Kentucker and Lydia?
Yeah, Kentucker I knew briefly. We had met, I'd met him at a few film festivals from some documentaries I'd been working on. I had very high regard for Kentucker as an actor from some of the films I'd seen him in. Dustin Guy Dufay's Bad Fever, I think, predominantly. And I had been working with Eleanor Hendricks, who acted in that in Bad Fever with Kentucker, as and she does casting, and she does a lot of work with, she does a lot of street casting and has done a lot of work with the Safdie brothers in New York City. And yeah, she suggested, you know, she said, what about Kentucker? And I was like, oh, do you think he would do it? You know, joke, you know, I was serious, and she obviously smiled. And yeah, he read it and was, you know, was very much into it. But right off the bat, Kentucker, which I loved, it's amazing when you're just kind of stuck in a script for years. You know, he had all these ideas. He was like, hey, what if we do this and this? And like, you know, can we talk about this? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to, you know, I've been dying to talk to a, you know, to someone about this. And then, yeah, Hannah Gross. I'd seen Hannah in a, why did I hear of Hannah? Hannah had come kind of coincidentally, I think, in like three different mutual friend pathways. Where it was just, oh, you know, check out Hannah or like think about Hannah. And I saw her in a few different things and just loved her and yeah, approached her and she read the script and liked it. And, you know, we met for coffee and then, you know, ended up sitting on a bench for like 3 hours talking about it.
Kentucker is just incredible in it. He gets across the emotion, you know, with so few words, you know what I mean? You could just what you're watching him the whole time. I think there's a particular bit where he's just sawing through one of the Christmas trees. Just the, I don't know, it just sort of seems understated, but you can tell that the way he's feeling. Lydia's gone on to a lot of success as well.
Yeah, Hannah's doing great. She's been on
Hannah, show sorry, Mindhunter. I keep saying Lydia. Yeah,
that's
Hannah.
Okay. I mix them up too. Yeah, Hannah's been on Mindhunter, the David Fincher show, and I think a few other things.
Well, she was in Joker, wasn't she? She played the Joker.
She was, mom. Yeah.
So another thing, a lot of the customers weren't actually actors. They were literally people just buying trees.
Yeah, some of them. Only a handful were actually like, oh, I happen to be there buying a tree. It was Elaine, our casting director, would kind of just walk around the neighborhood and just round people up, basically. She would just start, you know, strike up a conversation with someone, or look, she'd find someone she found interesting and talk to them and say, hey, you know, we're making this movie around the corner. Like, we're looking for people who, you know, want to do this, which is kind of what her thing is. The first customer we see, the guy with the glasses and the scruffy beard who asked for, you know, the wreath. He was at the bar caddy corner, just having a beer, and Elena was in there and started talking with him and brought him over and was like, oh, okay, great. And then, but somewhere is as incidental as just someone comes to buy a tree and we say, hey, can we film you? Is that okay? You know, we're making this movie. Do you mind if we film you buying your tree?
But so then when they're delivering the trees, those are all actors then?
In the delivery scenes. Well, no, not really. The party, the party was just we knew someone, one of our characters who got cut. It was happening to throwing like a holiday party, and we said, hey, can we film our party scene while you have your party? It's a lot easier to just go to a party than to recreate it. And so that's what we did for that one. You know, we had a small crew for this whole film anyway, like 6 or 7 of us. So we simply just showed up to this party and then literally had Kentucker just drag this tree through. And I think we might've had to splice in some audio, because you'd occasionally hear someone being like, whoa, like where are you going, tree guy? Just something that would be like kind of overly distracting, because it was a party and he just rolls into this party, you know, dragging this tree, and everyone's kind of like, what's going on? And then for the senior center, those were all people who were just in the center. We basically, so what they about, were sorry, incredible.
Because that was the one, that's the one that first sprung to mind when I thought about the question. The lady that works there, did she work there?
Oh yeah. No, so we cast her at the senior center. So we cast her, and then we found this kind of amazing center that was like, yeah, of course she can film, like no problem. And every time we, you know, the few locations we filmed at, it was like, hey, we're making this scrappy movie. There's 7 of us, you know, can we film at your location? We don't have any money, but like, we'll give you some garland. We'll give you some wreaths. We'll give you a tree. Basically just trading Christmas swag to film in places, which like in the senior center and at the pool, for instance, were both places that were just so delighted to have that. Basically, it was essentially the equivalent of like $400 of donated Christmas stuff to liven up their place.
I love the film. It's just...
Thank you.
The first time I watched it, I was all on my own. And now I'll only watch it on my own because I couldn't handle the idea of someone talking to it, because it's a short film and it's just so nuanced that I want to just take it all in. So yeah, I do love it. But the one thing I don't care for much is the soundtrack. And I wanted to ask you about that. Now,
don't care for the soundtrack.
Don't hate me, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, please.
I think the problem I've got with it is... Because as I think about it, I don't hate it. There's a couple of songs in there that I really do like. I can't remember, there was one where there was a woman singing really quickly. I can't remember what that's called. But there's also the swan that the lady plays with a pheromone. And I wondered why you made that choice about using the pheromone. And also, you haven't got any classic tunes in there. And there's a lot of classic tunes that are in the public domain that you could have used, but you didn't.
Well, like, what's a classic tune?
Well, any Christmas carol, you could have had an instrumental version of that, for example.
There are lots of free Christmas music songs in the film.
Yeah, they're but not like... I didn't recognize any. That's the point, I think.
Right, yeah.
I think at one point I did.
I think I thought that I couldn't use recognizable stuff, and I definitely didn't want to either.
That was a conscious effort to actually stay away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was also budgetary. And I think there was probably just a little of a romance about some of these. I was discovering lots of really beautiful old Christmas music that I'm sure being a Christmas guy, you know, stuff from the 50s and 40s and doo-wop, and like, just, it was like Christmas music was written just constantly for 20 or 30 years or 40 or 50 years. And I guess it still is. I don't know. I just kept finding stuff that I was like, I love this. This is so beautiful. You know, it was just a 78 that someone had scanned to YouTube, you know, and it was like, that was it. Like, who knows where this even came from? And it made it really hard when it came to licensing, getting the, you know, lining up the rights for some of these, was tracking down actually some of these. My wife's an attorney and she helped with the music clearances. And she was like, where did you find some of these? Like, we need to track down, like, who owns this? And we don't even know, you know, anything about it. So I ended up going a little too deep. But I think in the same way that I felt like the film was breaking against the conventions of Christmas films, I also wanted the music to break against the conventions of Christmas music, you know? So I didn't feel like we needed, you know, Deck the Halls and Jingle Bells and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. If you actually think about, you know, what moments there could be to use any of that music in a film, you know, if your job is to work Christmas, and which is kind of what the story is inspired by, someone who's, you know, if you've ever worked retail or worked in a restaurant, like, you've suffered having to work at the holidays, you don't want to hear Deck the Halls every day for 30 days, you know? So where's the music going to be played, right? So like, Noel wouldn't be listening to Jingle Bells every day at the Christmas tree stand.
Well, when you ran the stand, did you not play Christmas music in the background? You stayed away from it.
Yeah, I don't think I ever really played Christmas music.
Okay,
no.
That's cool.
And if I did, it was, I think my own interests have always been a little more esoteric as far as music goes, so I definitely favored that things. But, you know, when I was just revisiting the film earlier, because it's so, you know, I don't think about it very much often either. And a lot of it is, a lot of the Christmas music is just background incidental music, like when he goes into the different stores or makes the deliveries. And then there's three or four times where it's played, you know, in his radio inside the camper. And then I think there's only maybe like, besides the theremin and then the music cue when they're watching the tea flower at the end, I think there's only maybe two or three times where we specifically use like montage music.
Just to go back to the theremin, why did you choose that? Because that's really atmospheric, that one is. And it doesn't feel Christmassy, and I'm guessing it's not a Christmas song, but it really does set a mood.
Yeah, I heard it somewhere, I don't remember where, and the first time I heard Claire Rockmore, and I don't remember if it was specifically The Swan, or it might have been, you know, there's a second piece as well in the film, this Tchaikovsky piece, and anyway, I heard Claire Rockmore, and I was just kind of blown away. I'd never imagined the theremin in that way. I associated with, like, you know, horror films and sci-fi and, you know, kind of just like kitsch. She just, you know, almost had me in tears, and it was just so beautiful and just so melancholic. And it just was something that I kept close when I wrote, because it felt like it was the tone of what I felt like Noel was feeling kind of throughout the whole film, and Lydia to some extent as well. I think it was just the melancholic feel of it. And yeah, I know it definitely strikes people. It's often one of the first things people address or ask about. So I know it doesn't necessarily work for everybody.
Right. So I've pretty much covered everything I wanted to ask, really. So if people want to see it, they can watch it on Amazon Prime.
So if they're in the States, they can watch it on Amazon Prime, or they can rent it on iTunes or Vimeo or any of those rental sites. And then you can buy a DVD or a Blu-ray region free from Factory 25, which is our distributor.
Factory 25.
Factory 25.
Is it just Factory 25?
Yeah, I think it's Factory, but I think it might be, just Google it. It might be like Factory, the number 25 in the website. Not spelled out 25, I'm not sure. But they're the only film distributor that's called Factory 25, so it shouldn't be too hard to figure out. Yeah, it's a beautiful package, actually. I don't have any here, but it's made out of recycled chipboard cardboard, and it has the stencil of the Christmas tree stand, and made all the bonus features myself, so I feel very proud of it. But there's some really interesting, there's some scenes that didn't make it, like a scene with the boss man that didn't make it, and a few other scenes that got cut. And some behind the scenes stuff and that kind of thing.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you again.
Yeah, thanks, Jack.
Thank you again for the film. I loved it. I really do.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Charles. Cheers, buddy.
Yep. Be well. Cheers.
And you. So there we go. That was Charles Pokow, the director of Christmas Again, one of my favorite Christmas films. Like you said, if you want to watch it, it's on Amazon Prime. You can also go on iTunes or Vimeo, or you can go to Factory 25 to get a copy. I went on Factory 25 and I bought two copies, one for myself and one to give away. So if you would like a copy of the DVD of Christmas Again, all you've got to do is send me an email. Just say you'd like a copy and your postal address. I'll give it 5 days after the episode goes live. Everyone that sends me an email, I'll put the names in a hat, and the name I pull out of the hat, that person, I will post them my second copy of Christmas Again. And I really do hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So the email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. So that was this week's recommendation, Christmas Again. And I really, truly do think you should go out there and give it a shot. You lads, you'll love them. I'll love them. We'll love them. We'll love the Yule Lads, the Yule Lads, the Yule Lads, those Yule Lads, yeah! So boys and girls, we're down to our last two Yule Lads now, and this one is called, are you ready? Kettklokke. Kettklokke. I hope I'm saying that right. I think we can rest assured that I'm not. Anyway, Kettklokke means meat hook, and meat hook, he comes down on the 23rd of December, and he goes home on the 5th of January, and this is his verse of the poem. Meat Hook, the 12th one, his talent would display as soon as he arrived on St. Thorlak's Day. He snagged himself a morsel of meat of any sort, although his hook at times was a tiny bit short. Now, I think, gentlemen out there, we can all agree that occasionally I'm not even going to lower the tone. I'm not going to do that. Other podcasts would, but not this one. No way. No way. So, meat hook, that's pretty much it. He's got a hook that he uses for snagging meat. It'll, like, climb up on your roof, okay? And then, because here's the thing, right? This is the deal. People used to sort of smoke their meat. So what they'd do is they'd have the fire in, like, the middle of the room, and then the chimney would go above that, up into the roof, and they'd hang their meat in there to smoke it, you see? So what meat hook would do is he'd go up on the roof, shove his hook down the chimney, hook their meat, pull it back up, and he's off on his toes, just like that, with your meat in his hands. Now, occasionally, his hook was a tiny bit short, but frequently, his hook was the perfect length, and he would get your meat. So that's pretty much meat hook. One thing I want to say about this is it says, as soon as he arrived on St. Thorlak's Day. Now, St. Thorlak's Day is, in Icelandic, is called Thorlaksmessa, which means St. Thorlak's Mass. And St. Thorlak was originally Bishop Thorlakur, and he's the patron saint of Iceland. And in Iceland, on the 23rd of December, it's like the last day of preparations before Christmas, because the main celebrations of Christmas in Iceland are celebrated on Christmas Eve. To celebrate his feast or his mass, they eat putrefied skate. They tend to eat it with boiled or mashed potatoes. And apparently, this skate is so strong that when you take the first bite of it, it can actually numb your nose and your throat. I've got a better idea. Don't eat it. Don't even buy it. Just forget it ever happened. Have something nice. Get a Big Mac, bag of crisps maybe. Perhaps you'd like a Mars bar. But that's what they do. They eat their fish, their super strong fish, which is so bad. Apparently, if you go to like Reykjavik on the 23rd of December, the whole place just reeks of this fish because everyone's out there eating it, celebrating St. Thorlak's Day. So there you go. Now, we're getting a bit closer to Christmas, so the kids that leave, it's got to be a pretty big present now, hasn't it? Do you know what I mean? Tomorrow's the big one. And then, so today, you're going to get something decent. I'm not going to suggest what it could be, because I don't know what the kids are into these days. Are they still into, like, hula hoops? They're like, hula hoops? A Rubik's Cube? Cabbage Patch Dolls? I don't know what the kids are into. Anyway, they're going to get a pretty decent present, but then tomorrow is the big one. So that's this week's Yule Lad. Hope you liked it. Whoa, where do you think you're going? Get back here. What, me? Yeah, you, get back here. What? There's more, mate. Alright, so carry on with the Yuletide, lads. Goodness me, the people I have to work with around here. Right, okay. So I got a message from Tony Dixon, who you might remember from the two messages he sent me earlier in the show. Well, he sent me a link to a tune by Jonah Knight. It's part of an album called Another Creepy Christmas. And the song is called The Yuletide Lads. Let me play a clip for you. It's really lovely. Listen to this.
So you say you want to move to Iceland, for the people and the land and the sky. But before you go, you really should know what happens there at Christmas time. Here come the Yuletide lads, 13 trolls living in a hole. Here they come, one by one, sneaking into your home.
Get yourselves on YouTube or Spotify or wherever you want to, and have a listen to the whole of that song. Obviously, I can't play the whole thing because, you know, copyright and whatnot. But I hope you liked it. I love it. Have a listen to the whole song. It is really a nice song. And thank you so much to Tony for sending that through. I really appreciate it, Tony. So that is this week's Yule Lads. Can I go now? Thank you. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a massive thank you to Tony Dixon, Benji Pearson, Shelley and Frank Arnold, and of course Charles Pokel for your help with the episode. I really do appreciate it. I really hope you've all enjoyed the show. If you want to get in touch, if you want to send in something for the show, I'd really appreciate it. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go to the website, which is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again for the last full episode of the year, and that'll be in about 10 days' time. In the meantime, I hope your preparations for Christmas are going well. I've loved having you here. You know I love you. Merry Christmas.
I see it, but I don't believe it.
You're missing the point.
What is the point?
Seeing isn't believing. Believing is seeing.